Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and I am here with, I'm actually not here with, but I'm on the phone right now with Jake Welch. Jake, thank you for jumping on CougarCast with me this week. Tosh is in Africa right now, he's in South Africa, so he probably has no opinions about Mississippi State, but we all know that Jake does. I hope you've read him on Vanquish the Foe. Let me put him over here for just one second. Right, there's a lot of people you can read about BYU football from online, right? If you're not reading Jake Welch, right, you're making a mistake. The guy knows his stuff. He's great. He's putting out videos about, you know, play breakdowns. He's got his power rankings article. If you need a guy to read on the internet for BYU football, it's Jake Welch. So, welcome to the show, Jake.
Thank you. You're very effulgent in your praise, and I very much appreciate that. And I'll give you your $40 after the show is done. That should be coming through on Venmo. So thank you. Thank you for coming through on our deal.
100% can be bribed. 100%.
Yeah.
The Cougars, a big win against Michigan State. Some people are saying it's one of the better wins in the program history. I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Michigan State game. But I'll give you the floor first. What were your biggest takeaways from the Michigan State performance?
I think it was the first time we were able to see, at least within a half of football. The first half, it was really a shaky start. But I think in the second half is when we saw the most complete team that we've seen all year. So we're able to have, you know, defensive performance that was really strong, I think, in all facets there. There was that one drive where they came and scored a touchdown. And I think that we were a little bit in a prevent defense there, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, saying that they were fine conceding that touchdown. But everywhere else, I mean, the offense moved the ball very efficiently. They really, you know, probably executed their game plan perfectly and just, you know, running the football, converting on third down with efficiency, and then just playing good hard-nosed defense. So I think that it was the first time we were able to see, you know, the game plan really coming to fruition and us seeing a complete performance all the way around.
Yeah, it was. It was the first time that all came together, and it's, of course, the first one that wasn't a nail-biter. So thank goodness for that.
Yes. I mean, I remember thinking to myself, I was like, what is this? What is this feeling that I'm feeling? Like, I'm not going to have to... Yeah, I don't know what this is supposed to feel like, but it's new, and I like it, and I like this new feeling.
Well, I thought that, like you said, you know, that it was a very complete performance in the second half. First half was a little sloppy, had its moments, but, you know, they did. They were just really great. 28 points in that second half, that's winning football. I don't care who you're playing. 28 points and a half is a great, great, great job. So I had this thought. If you're a program at a crossroads, like Michigan State was, is there a worse program to have come and visit you and play you at a time like that than BYU? I mean, we sniped Texas in a crossroads sort of week. We've sniped a few teams like this when, you know, there's been some transition going on. Oklahoma had a little bit of transition happening. And the point is you know, when you schedule BYU, you better be solid and ready to be playing. What I'm saying is you can't have off the field stuff kind of going on within your fan base. It's death to play BYU in that circumstance.
Yeah, and it's funny because I think the same exact thing is happening with Mississippi State, and I'm curious as to the perception of what the opposing fans think versus what the opposing like coaching staff and players think, because you hear all the time. I mean, you heard Mark D'Antonio and also this week with Dan Mullen both say, you know, this is a good BYU football team. Like, they play good defense. They, you know, are physical. They hit hard. And you hear, you know, you hear the praise and you recognize that. But then you hear the fan bases and you kind of, like, see stuff on Twitter and message boards and stuff like that. And you get a lot of, like, oh, well, you know, we should beat this BYU team because, you know, they're independent, you know, they're not officially part of a Power 5 conference, you know, they're not that great. So I remember even seeing something today on a fellow Sports Nation blog from Mississippi State saying something like, you know, Mississippi State needs so many more wins to get to bowl eligibility. And they said, okay, they'll probably beat BYU because we play in the SEC. And, like, that was their only reasoning was the fact that they played in a Power 5 conference. I was like, oh, cool, great. Glad that you guys are just kind of...
Oh, it goes further than Utah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, there's other football teams besides the ones in the South? Oh, okay, all right, good to know. So, but, like, to your point, though, like, you don't want to have BYU on your schedule as a non-conference opponent thinking that you're going to get some kind of reprieve, because that's usually what it is for this, you know, for SEC and Big Ten teams. You know, they're going to be playing a pretty physical schedule week in and week out within their conference schedule, and when they get to BYU midway point through the season, some players might be thinking, oh, good, all right, we don't need to really go all out this week because this, you know, realistically could be a lesser opponent. But it's, I mean, I'm more than happy to play the role of spoiler, you know. Obviously, we're kind of like that baseball team, you know, towards the end of the season. You know you're not going to make it to the playoffs, but they're playing so well, and they're beating the teams that are going to be, you know, competing for conference titles and stuff. So I appreciate that, and I think that's really going to come into play with Boise State here in a few weeks, or a few weeks next week, when we play them, because they're ranked and they're going to be, you know, climbing the rankings there, and they're obviously hoping for a New Year's Six Bowl win, and hopefully we'll spoil that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do agree with you. We need to come up with a terminology for that. I mean, we all say spoiler, but we need to come up with a good sports terminology that refers to that, where I guess it is just spoiler, but I feel unsatisfied with that, Jake. I feel like we need something better.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's probably a really good word or phrase that probably describes... I have like an emotion. I feel like that it's just like, oh, dang, crap. Why did we underestimate that team so much? That was a mistake. I think that's like what the feeling is. A lot of these teams, like afterwards, they're just like, oh man, yeah, that was not smart of us to think that we could, you know, easily beat this team, or, you know, that they're not as good as we think that they are, kind of a thing. I always wonder that too. Sorry,
go ahead.
I'm always curious, like with you know, college football players. If a lot of them genuinely think, I mean, they watch film and they hear their coaches say, this is a good team. I wonder if in the back of their minds, like, shoot, you know, they're not that good. these, you know, white Polynesian kids from Utah, they're, they're not going to be that great, blah, 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 you know.
it is interesting, you know, the motivation element of playing BYU. It's fascinating. But in order to beat a team like BYU, you got to have, you know, a lot of leadership on your side. You got to be ready to play hard. They're going to punch you. BYU will punch you once or twice in a game. You know, last year it was literally, but, you know, now it's figuratively. We're helping people up now, Jake.
Yeah, no, we're a different team. We're a classy program.
Yeah, we're so classy now. But yeah, one of the things that I think is just real critical is that you have to have, you know, those leaders on the field that are going to help you get those things done. And I know that that's a big topic of conversation out there in Starksville. They're really worried that there's not enough leadership found on that Bulldogs roster over there. They're 2-3. They have losses to South Alabama, LSU, close loss, and then they got licked pretty good by Auburn last week. And they had a barn burner with UMass on the road. So listen, I haven't followed it as well as their fans, but I'll take their word at it. It's just like I don't think BYU is the team you want to be playing when you're having questions about leadership.
No, and I think that from that standpoint, I mean, BYU comes in, we're a pretty senior laden team. We have a senior quarterback, we have a senior running back, our, you know, defensive captains. Kainuku is a senior. We have a few other seniors in different positions. And, you know, we have a lot of good leaders. And I think that kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, we're in these close games. One, because, you know, we're playing opponents to their level. But I also think it's in these opportunities and times when we've been down late in the fourth quarter, our seniors play really well and do what they need to do to put us in a position to win. And so I think that helps a lot, that we have, you know, a lot of great leadership. And when you face a team like Mississippi State, I think the key for BYU this week will be to jump on them early, because just like you saw this last week when Mississippi State played Auburn, I mean, I think they came out with a 35-7 or like a 35-0 lead initially, and they're playing catch up the rest of the time. And so I don't think that we'll be able to come out firing with that many points. I'll be very surprised if we even crack 30. But I think that we can jump on them early and get like a 10, 14, 17 point lead in the first half. I think that there's going to be a lot to overcome mentally for this Mississippi State team, because it's like, man, we've already lost to South Alabama. We just got killed by Auburn. Now we're here. It's a Friday night. It's a late night in Provo.
Altitude.
You know, we're going to be sucking wind. And so I think that if you can jump on them early, like it'll be easy to deflate a team like this just based off of what we've seen. Now, I don't want to discredit Dan Mullen, because I think he's a very good coach, and I think he's capable of rallying the troops and making something happen. And I still think that, you know, they're a good team with a lot of talent that can, you know, hurt us. I mean, I'm looking at the Missouri game last year, which is the same kind of thing. We came in feeling confident, having our offense playing pretty well, and then we face an SEC team that, for all intents and purposes, isn't very good within the context of their conference, and we lose. So you just don't know.
I have a question. I'm with you. Early leads change how games play out all the time. So BYU struggled early in games. Outside of the Toledo game, I think we've had a really hard time getting out of the gates in the first half.
And maybe that's because of the way that our offense is, I don't want to say styled, but maybe that's our offensive objective, where, you know, we come into the first half and we want to run the football, and we really don't have an opportunity to really wear the opposition down until that second half, because either we're very well conditioned or we're just, you know, repeatedly coming after them and saying, hey, you know that we're going to run it. We know that we're going to run it. You know, try and stop us, because we're just going to be physical and run right over you. And maybe that really doesn't set effect into the second half. I hope that we can be a lot more efficient in the first half and kind of, you know, get points and not just pray that a Taysom to Jonah Trinneman 75-yard, you know, pass isn't going to just – we're not going to get bailed out by that every week. And so I think having success in the first half is just converting on third down and not putting ourselves in positions, at least with penalties. I think those are the real drive killers. I mean, we're essentially kind of like an offense with – like a triple option offense sometimes, where – if they get off schedule on first down, if they don't get, you know, 3, 4, 5 yards on first down, then it's really hard for them to catch up.
Right.
I think there was the one time against Michigan State where we did have a penalty on first down and then we were able to convert on third down eventually. But it's just really hard for our offense to do that. We're not equipped to convert on third and long.
And they did pretty well at that, though, against Michigan State. That was one of the things that really helped. But you're right, and we talked about this on our show last week, but BYU's sort of a Big Ten team, the way they play.
They really are.
They run hard. They try to be really solid on defense and tackle well and kind of keep people short. And they play, you know, really deep defensively, and then they run. And down and distance is really important. Field position is really important for them. And then, of course, those red zone conversions. And, that was the thing in the first half. If you were to get tough on them, you know, BYU made it inside the Michigan State 30 three times in the first half and came away with 3 points. So that, you know, but I love the point that you're making, though, is that maybe it's just a matter of, you know, as time goes on in the game and just BYU wears on you, and it's a lot harder to continue to play with the same level of intensity. So are you you're that, and do you think it's partially coach adjustments, or do you just think that physicality is what's winning the day for them in the second half?
I think there are some coaching adjustments. I think that there's some small things, at least within – I sometimes wonder if our offense is very disciplined, just because we have a lot of these dumb – penalties, these motion penalties, these illegal formation penalties. I think we've kind of cut down on them a little bit in the last couple of weeks, but it seems those are the real drive killers, because, you know, you have yourself in, you know, certain situations and you have to tack on another 5, you know, yards onto the play. And so I think it's being disciplined in those areas. But I do think that, you know, our coaches are getting more comfortable calling a cadence and a series of plays that have us running on first down, running on second down, or, you know, and being okay with setting ourselves up with a third and short, knowing that we can get that with, you know, our running backs and with a quarterback who can run for a first down. So I think that they're just, I think that we're finally at the point in the season where it's like, okay, we know what our offense is. We know that we have a quarterback who's going to manage the game as opposed to try and win the game for us. And we're going to put it on our running back and our offensive line to say, okay, we're going to put ourselves in more of these third and less than five situations. We got to be prepared to pick those up routinely.
I love it. And, I think that it's good to know that that's the identity of the team, that we're not looking for a game-breaking plays out of Taysom Hill any longer. We're looking for him to not turn over the football and make solid reads, complete those reads, and give us a chance, you know. And if you throw interceptions, if you throw pick sixes, if, you know, it just be ball security is the name of the game, and let Linehan punt and punt the other team deep into their own area, which was huge in that first half against Michigan State. And I just think that as they've continued to kind of rely on just letting Jamal be the guy that kind of carries the load and carries them, to victory, that's huge. I just wrote an article. It just got published on Vanquish the Foe. But Jamal's the first guy in history. He's had over 600 yards during the last three games. He is the only guy to ever do that at BYU. He's been absolutely incredible. Everything that he's done has been really good. I got looking into it, Jake. There's been 11 guys that have rushed three consecutive games in a row for 100 yards or more in BYU football's history. But that three-game plateau seems to be almost impossible for people to get over. Only two people have been able to go into game four and get another 100-yard game. The game plan is out there on Jamal Williams. You have to control and limit Jamal. I think that if you're able to limit Jamal Williams, beating BYU gets infinitely easier. So I've wondered this several times this week. Is Jamal to that special place as a running back where he is, you can game plan all you want, but he's going to get his?
To an extent, I mean, we already saw earlier this year where he was pretty much shut down against UCLA. I think it's because the UCLA team decided they are not going to run the football on us regardless. Like, that's just not going to happen. And we got, you know, we got put in a situation where Taysom was, you know, forced to throw the ball a lot more, and it wasn't really as effective. And so I think that in that game, the coaches probably, I don't think that they had as much confidence to say, okay, you know, we're going to continue to try and just pound the ball in the second half. And I think they went away from that a little bit. So I think that maybe now they have a little bit more confidence to do that. And maybe in those early games they said, man, you know, Jamal only has...
He had two yards a carry. 20, yeah,
28 yards. But he only had 14 carries.
Right.
You know, double that. And odds are he's probably going to, you know, pick up a few and get those bigger chunk plays.
That we're used to seeing him get those, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 yard runs that he can bust off on a regular basis. So maybe it was just the offensive coaching staff not having confidence that they were able to, you know, do that with what UCLA was showing. And I think that UCLA just probably had a really good game plan. And I think that's going to continue. I think that against Mississippi State, they're going to look at that UCLA game film and say, okay, Jamal Williams only had 28 yards on the ground that game. And, Taysom Hill had to throw the ball 48 times, which is something we absolutely do not want to happen.
Absolutely not.
I mean, love the guy. I think that, and I think that, I mean, I've been pretty critical of Taysom and his ability to throw the ball. I think you've kind of been leading that charge for a long time as well.
And kind of really
calling for Tanner to come in. But I appreciate how the coaching staff, okay, they're not trying to make Taysom this world-beating quarterback. They say, okay, we know what we have with him now. We know what he can do, and we know what he can't do. He can be physical and run for first downs. He can be, you know, he can be mobile and buy you more time while, you know, outside of the pocket and run, have those run pass options. And so I think they say, okay, that's what he's good with, and that's what he feels a little more comfortable with. And so they have confidence in calling that kind of game plan and really just sticking through the entire way.
And they've figured out how to keep him healthy too. I mean, I think the way they're calling this thing is keeping him healthy. It's helping.
Yeah, and I think how healthy he stays will kind of depend on him and how much he really forces the issue with some of these running plays. I think there's times where you see him pull up and you can kind of just get that feeling of like, okay, yeah, he probably felt that he was going a little bit too, you know, flying a little too close to the sun, if that's a good metaphor. I don't know.
Icarus. Old Icarus. Yes. Back there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, I've had a lot of people try to give me a lot of trouble about, you know, kind of my feelings about Taysom Hill. I'll admit, like, he's doing enough to give us a shot. I think that you're right, that the way that the coaches have figured out how to use him and to try to make the most of his, you know, skill set and what he does, you know, they're getting enough out of him to give him a chance to win. And so there's that. So they're going to go with him. It's not going to change. Like, it's fine. Like, it's fine. But the whole point, I guess, that I've been trying to communicate is that, you know, I mean, against Michigan State, he had 4.6 yards per pass, right, attempt. And so it's like, it just shows, it's like they're playing within the limitations that he has. And my argument was never kind of an anti Taysom if I'm asking for the other guy, but, you know, I hope he does well. I like to see him do well. If that makes sense, I've just wondered if maybe we got a guy on the sideline that could give you more. That's what the concern is.
Yeah. And I think that's a legitimate question to ask, but I think that there's some, you know, people that are just, I mean, I'm emotionally invested in Taysom as a player because of what he's done for the program and for the type of person that he is and what he brings to the table. But I think it's completely fair for us to ask, you know, could another quarterback give our offense a completely new element that doesn't exist right now? The offensive coaches and the head coach has decided that, you know, they're fine sticking with the guy who is limited in certain areas of the game. And, you know, and they very well could find out that, you know, if Tanner did go in there, maybe we realize that Taysom's mobility there are definitely times in that game, I mean, where we saw his mobility helped us out immensely.
No question.
And maybe we saw this, oh man, maybe that's something that we're missing when we get Tanner Mangum. But I also think that people forget that Tanner Mangum isn't like this stone-footed behemoth that just like cements his...
He's not Frankenstein based there. Yeah.
Yeah, he's... I remember seeing him last year, and he didn't go off running a whole bunch, but he definitely was able to move within the pocket and have that great pocket sense to, you know, make plays. And so there's certain intangibles. There's just certain things that Taysom is able to do, is leadership. And, you know, that moxie that a certain player just has when he's out there on the field. And, you know, like we've said, the coaches are obviously going to stick with it. I'm very curious what our offense looks like next year once we, one, don't have a running back that's as dominant as Jamal Williams. Squad Canada has shown in the last couple of weeks that he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
But I don't think he has that same – I think Squally works really well as a secondary back, you know, coming in to spell a guy like Jamal because – he's able to provide that quick burst, but we kind of saw in other games this season that he doesn't have quite the leg drive and push and everything that Jamal does. So I'm curious to see what he does as a featured back. And so when that happens, you know, Squally will be there. A lot of our wide receivers graduate. You know, Juergens graduates. Kurtz is a senior this year. And we'll have, you know, fresh new crop of guys coming in. But then we're going to have an upgrade, at least we can assume, in the passing attack of Tanner Mangum. So maybe they're just saying, okay, we're going to maximize our seniors right now, you know, get what we can out of them, and then next year will be the Tanner Mangum show.
Yep. So and they've had an opportunity in each of the games. And so that's, you know, I don't know what else you can say other than that. You know, he's done enough to give him an opportunity in every single game that they've played. So we'll. I'm certain that we'll see him the rest of the way. It seems like he's going to stay healthy the rest of the way, and so it's fine. You know, I've kind of made I've made my peace with it, you know. So, all right. Well, so listen. So I want to talk a little bit more about Mississippi State. They have a dual threat quarterback, Nick Fitzgerald. He's an average to below average passer. He's a decent at running. He's leading their team in running. He has just over 300 yards on the season through five games. He's been okay at running. His passing passer rating is just over 100. So. They've really struggled. He's not this guy that's really going to kill you, but if he is going to beat you, it'll be on the ground. So what do you suppose that Elisa Tuiaki will dial up to try to rein that in?
You know, I'm curious to see, because it seems like that the BYU defense is kind of, I don't want to say like all over the place, but it's there doesn't seem to be like a real... Let me put it this way. I think it all depends on what Mississippi State comes out doing. I think that Mississippi State will kind of see the past film on BYU and say, all right, we can probably attack these guys a little bit more through the air. And depending on what personnel that they have in there, you know, if Tulum is going to be in there, if Butch Powell is going to be back, if Troy Warner is going to be playing cornerback for us.
Those are all huge. I think that, yeah.
Yeah, all very, I mean, vital parts of our defense. Playing a team like Mississippi State, who has good athletes at the skill positions, I think that's something you can kind of count on any week when you play an SEC team, regardless if they're at the very bottom and if they're losing to, you know, programs that aren't that great. They still have athletes. They still have guys that can run fast, and that doesn't change, you know, anything. So I think that it will depend on, one, how Mississippi State comes out. If they're really throwing the ball a whole lot, I think that will kind of like dictate the plan of how we adjust to what's going on. I think that we'll try and get pressure. I think that's something that after the Toledo game, I think Tuiaki said that he was disappointed in himself in abandoning that and just letting the Toledo quarterback have all day to throw. And he said, okay, we need to get more pressure. And I like that we did that against Michigan State in the second half.
We did.
I mean, once Seiya Tatu came back in, he came off. And I think he got, what, two sacks?
I think that's right.
And as the team, and I think we had three sacks in that second half. And so I think that's, and it's good that he feels a little bit more comfortable doing that. So I think it kind of depends on that and the personnel that we have playing.
Well, for those that are interested, the guy that they got to stop receiving-wise, matchup to look up, Michael Davis, he's going to be put against Fred Ross. Fred Ross has been their outstanding wide receiver this year. He leads the team in scoring. He's got five touchdown catches in the game, and he's the guy that they're really looking to when they get down to red zone area. 6'1", 207, a lot of people think that he's a second day of the NFL draft kind of guy. And then the other guy that you may look for, may be playing on Sunday, is they have a tackle named Justin Senior, 6'5", 295. And so, again, that's another guy where if we can get the best of him with Tautu or Longhi, you know, that like you said, pass rush is always just huge. And Fitzgerald doesn't look to me to be a guy that can really kill you. He hasn't shown that yet. And so it'll be interesting. But the guy that if we can take away Fred Ross and not let him kind of get rolling over there at the receiver position, that'll be really, really beneficial to the Cougars. Defensively, Mississippi State do a lot of the same things that Michigan State do from all the stuff that I got looking into. Basically, I found that they give up a lot of 10-plus yard plays, but not very many 20-plus yard plays. So it's all about that intermediate game. If you can kind of intermediate pass, get a few runs that go, you know, 15 yards up the field, that's kind of what they're comfortable having people attack. They cheat short, but they also play deep. So it'll be interesting to see how we attack that game plan. And I thought that that's what they did against Michigan State that was really successful. Boy, they were really able to attack that intermediate game at critical moments.
Yeah, I think that we were able to move the ball down the field with those, you know, short to intermediate passing routes that were there. There were a few times, you know, when we were able to connect with Kurtz and Juergens and Trinneman on, you know, pretty successful plays that, you know, we didn't need to get 25 yards, but if you're going to if you're going to concede that much, then you just take that and make sure that you're consistent. It's kind of like the Bronco Mendenhall philosophy of defense, where it's like, give them the short to intermediate stuff, but just force them to be so dang consistent on offense, and know that at some point they're probably going to make a mistake, because it's really hard for a team to have a 12, 15, 18 play drive
without a holding or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Without a mistake or, you know, something being off schedule. So if that's the case with Mississippi State, you know, I think it'll, like you said, it'll be a lot like the Michigan State game, where we're not going to get plays in big chunks. We're not going to have a lot of over the top passes. We're not going to do a lot like that, but we will have opportunities to just have these 8 to 12 minute drives that just chew a lot of clock. I don't think we had a 12-minute drive. That's a really long drive.
That's
12 minutes. 12 minutes is way too long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like an 8-minute drive.
Right. Right. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see. And like you said, having those, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how Michigan, or, oh my gosh, I can't believe I did that. Mississippi State. It'll be really interesting to see how Mississippi State handles some of those things with BYU. And if they'll do things that have been successful in the past, like making sure that you sell out on run and see if the pass can beat you, and do those things. But again, that all relies on how good that offensive line can block again. And if we can get, you know, Jamal really rolling, and if we can get Squally running more, and I'm happy to see Squally getting more carries. Just a little nugget for the listeners, Jamal has had the biggest workload of any running back in BYU history over 3 weeks. His 84 carries, nobody's had that many carries in 3 weeks in the history of the program. They're really, you know, working that guy.
It's funny because anytime Jamal leaves the game, everyone loses their collective minds. It's as if, like, you know, what? Jamal's not in this series? How come he's not in? What's going on? Is he hurt? Is he hurt? What's going on? Can someone go down on the field and find out what's going on?
It's right.
Like, guys, the guy has to get a series off every once in a while. He's not going to, I mean, yeah, it's great that he's running the ball 3 times a game, but that's so many times. Like, when you consider the physical nature of the game, this isn't like back in the 90s and 80s when you had a lot of running backs that were, you know, running the ball 30 plus times a game. It's just not like that anymore. The game has done changed for us. So it's not, we shouldn't be surprised when Jamal Williams gets a couple plays off.
That being said, I would love to see him come in whenever they get to the red zone.
Yeah. Just so we, yeah, that's as we saw last week and good old Algernon Brown, bless his heart. He's not a, I don't know. I think he's a great fullback. I think he can run well in space, but in a situation like that where you need to like jump over something or provide a lot of burst, that's not exactly his thing.
He can catch it really well out of the backfield. That's the other.
Yeah, he got that one. I think it was that one pass, and I think it was the first drive of the second half when Taysom threw it like way like.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was supposed to be kind of in front of him. He threw it like over his back shoulder. That's not a back shoulder throw. That's, you know, in that situation. But Algie made a great catch, and then it was able to get, you know, 5-6 yards. I think that's the thing. I think Algie's great in space. Like, we saw that one run, I think it was during a scrimmage. It's my favorite video of Algie Brown, where he ran over like 7 people.
Right.
And he's great in the open field. He can catch the ball, and I think he can run pretty well. But in a short yardage situation like that, not his forte, not his thing.
So, Jake, you have been, let me get to the, there's, I want to ask you about you and your fascination with Jake Oldroyd here in a minute. So,
absolutely.
So get ready for that. But, let's do, how do you see this game playing out? Do you got any game and score predictions for us?
I think it's going to be a relatively low scoring game. Just, I think it's going to be a lot like the Missouri game last year, where, you know, BYU's offense won't be as effective as it was in weeks previous. I think we saw a lot of great progress in terms of play calling and execution the last couple of weeks from the offense. I think that we'll be playing some, you know, a team that's probably a little bit bigger, more physical, and I think a team that will challenge our wide receivers a lot with some press man coverage, and that will probably stack the box with 8-9 guys and say, hey, if you want to throw it over the top, be our guest, but good luck trying. So I think it'll be a low-scoring game, but I still think BYU comes out on top. I'm going to call this one, I'll say 21-14 BYU.
All right, yeah, I have something similar. I think it's low scoring. I think it's tight. I have BYU as well this week. I'm going to take them at 24, Mississippi State 17. Again, I don't like that the Bulldogs seem like they're at a crossroad. I think when you're kind of fledgling as a program and trying to find answers, you don't bounce back playing BYU. That's just not the right time to do it. So
yeah. But at the same time, I mean, gosh dang, I remember thinking Missouri, they had like lost a couple games and like
they had all that turmoil on campus and everything.
But part of me thinks that kind of helps. I think that kind of like helps the football team where they said, okay, we have a lot of distractions right now, but we're still going to come out and play well. And I think that kind of like unified them in a small way, saying like, hey, let's go do this for the university and for our student body and help them feel good about things. So.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but I still think it's the same kind of a thing where it's like, yeah, we're not playing an SEC opponent. They're probably not going to be as physical as some of these other teams that we face, even though we very well could be. But I think that they'll compete with us a lot more than maybe what some BYU fans think that they will.
Yeah, I think it's crazy to not think that this is within a one score game. I think it will be a pretty darn good game and close. How about this prediction? Jamal Williams is going to break the all-time rush record. He's only 63 yards away. I like him for 100 yards to get 4 games in a row with 100 yards rushing. Only 3 people that have ever done that. He'll join that group. So he'll be third.
I think it'll be tough. I think he has to get at least 25 carries to get to 100 yards, but I think he'll get it.
I think you have to give Jamal 25 carries, though, like with the game plan that they've run and the identity that they have, unless they're going to rely more on Squally and try to get him in there more, or maybe even try. I mean, who's behind Squally? Is it Burt? Riley Burt? Yeah. So
I think they're trying to redshirt him, though.
I think you're right. We haven't seen him this year. Yeah.
We haven't.
Trey Dye?
Trey Dye, I think, is the one that comes next up on the on the depth chart there. Maybe, I mean, I'm sure we'd see more Algie. We've seen that a few times where Algie will move from the fullback position and be more of a halfback there. So,
all right. So each week in your power ranking article, you have a section of it called Jake versus Jake. what was it about Jake Olroy that made you want to, I don't know. It's not really feuding with him, but,
No, we just like to, I like to compare and see, okay, who had a better week, you know, who performed. This is mostly for me to, helps motivate me to have a good week.
So we're 6 weeks into this. Who's winning? What's your record against, old Jake Olroy?
Oh man, I think he's won 5 times. I've won once.
Oh no!
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because he's only played in 2 games. But he was obviously magnificent in both of those. I mean, he had the game winner that one week, and then he had like 2 perfect field goals against Utah, which were magnificent. And so, I think that it's been tricky these last couple weeks. I mean, he had his mission call last week, and so you can't really beat that. And there are a couple other times where he had a really nice haircut, and I think I got a parking ticket that week, so it wasn't that great. And so it's just nice to be able to have some kind of, you know, friendly competition. And mostly it motivates me to become a better person. So it's nice to, I'm glad that he's there and he willing. I don't know. I have no idea if he even reads the articles or if he ever sees any of this, but maybe he does. Maybe he's a little bit motivated too. I think that someone said that this isn't possible. Someone said that he's going to try and get like a red shirt. Maybe he'll try and get a medical red shirt. That's what it is, because he only played in 2 games. But I think he's going to shut it down for the rest of the year and then come back and kick field goals for us in 2019. Is that what it's going
to
be?
Yeah, man. I think people are looking more forward to that than Motokaya Longi stepping on campus. The return of Oldroy.
I mean, he's him and his magical green cleats. I mean, he's even if he like comes back and decides like not to play football ever again, he's like, yeah, I just want to focus on my schoolwork. He like might go down as one of the greatest folk heroes of BYU sports legendum.
I love Jake Make. I'm with you. So I've been a little fascinated with him as well. So, but that's good. Well, good luck to you as you continue to best the freshman there.
Thanks. I'm gonna need it. I mean, he's been on fire. I don't know. This is the tricky thing. I'm not sure how to like keep on concocting things that have like happened in his life, because I mean, he doesn't really tweet a whole lot. I don't really see what else is going on in his life.
Right.
And so I just have, sometimes I have to make up some stuff, but.
The other one, Jake, that you do sometimes that I love is you also do the Twitter interview. I think you've done that. You did it for, yes, for Tanner. And then who else have we done it with?
I did it with Jake Butt last year.
Oh, you did with, yeah, that's right. You did it with Jake Butt.
It requires a very specific kind of Twitter account, and those two guys were just perfect. So
yeah, okay, all right. Well, you might take a look at Handsome Tanny Ehlers. That's you know.
That's actually not a bad idea. The ones that are best are Tanner's was just so perfect because he just has all these kind of just really open, non-specific, directly at anyone, where it's like, today was a great day. Yeah. So excited for this math test or whatever it is. You're like, okay, cool. Sounds like he's just talking to one person.
He's using Twitter the way that they initially thought of it, where you were just supposed to tweet everything that you did throughout the day. What are you doing? Right?
Pretty much. No, that's kind of what he does.
All right, everybody. You can find him, BYU All Blue. Also, go get NBA 2K17.
Yeah. Go buy 2K17, everyone. This is sponsored by that.
That would be great. But now Jake helps with the marketing campaign for all those guys, so that's great. But anyway, all right, Jake, thank you so much for coming on BYU All Blue. Anything else that you want to cover or plug or anything?
I think that we've covered just about everything. I'm excited to be in person at the game this week. I've been to two games so far this year, the one at Arizona and then the one in D.C. against West Virginia. So I've had a win and I've had a loss, and hopefully we'll get another win to make my attendance above 500 for this year.
All right, let's do it. All right, thanks so much for coming on.
All right, thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
All right, we'll see you. Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games, and go Cougars!